It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Manufacturing is not the great economic power it once was in Illinois and in the United States in general. There are a lot of reasons for that. We could have an entire series of shows on it. But today we're going to revisit our focus on the visible ghosts of that industrial economy, which still haunt Illinois and the rest of the Rust Belt. Factories, like the former Pillsbury Mills site in Springfield, have sat vacant for years, if not decades. Many of them have been abandoned entirely, left to decay, a visible symbol of what manufacturing used to mean in a lot of our communities. Early last year, a nonprofit called Moving Pillsbury Forward acquired the 18-acre Pillsbury Mills site with a goal of clearing the area so it can eventually be used for light industry. Just this month, the city of Springfield allocated $1.5 million to help begin that demolition. Joining us for this conversation was Chris Richmond, the son of a former Pillsbury employee and president of Moving Pillsbury Forward. He joined us to talk about what goes into redeveloping an area like the Pillsbury Mills site. We were also joined by Dan Seals, CEO of Intersect Illinois, which has been working to shake off Illinois' Rust Belt reputation. And also with us was David Wilson, professor in the Department of Geography and Geographic Information Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's studied the challenges that can go into rehabilitating and redeveloping the economies of cities across the Rust Belt. He connected to us from Germany while traveling across Europe giving talks on this very subject. Because this conversation is on tape, we are not taking calls live today, but you can let us know what you think by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. All right, Chris, I want to begin with you. For those who have not seen Pillsbury Mills, paint a picture. What does it look like compared to its peak, or I guess even when it first closed?
Right. Today, some 22 years after it closed, it's rife with, broken windows and decay. You can see, 20-foot trees growing on the roofs. So it's really a large scale project. We've got buildings that they go as high as 220 feet in the air. So it's one of those things here in Springfield that you can see from miles around.
What's the effect for the neighborhoods around the factory? What effect is having this, hulk, this rusting hulk with trees growing out of the roof? There was that story about the dog being stuck on one of the towers a few years ago.
Right. So, and we've got a lot of verticality at Pillsbury. So we've got, 800,000 square feet of built space and tall buildings. And the neighbors, they've watched this deteriorate over time, over 20-year period of time. And we're still trying to get our arms around it. We've made great headway with Moving Pillsbury Forward. And we're moving pretty quickly toward large-scale demolition. But it's a real challenge, these kind of projects.
David Wilson, a few years ago, you co-authored a paper looking at what's been happening in probably one of the most prominent Rust Belt cities in the country, and that's Flint, Michigan. How did the decline of manufacturing affect that city as a whole?
That's a great question, Brian. So Flint is a very economically depressed city. Deindustrialization has hit it in a fundamental major way. There's been substantial population loss. The tax base has eroded in the city. At the same time, the spirit of the people has been immense. It's very striking when you go there and you talk to the people about the resiliency of the population on the ground. But it is a very depressed city. And a good, accurate indication of that is that in 1975, General Motors employed about 86,000 people in Flint. Now, at this very moment in time, the city, that is GM, employs a little bit less than 600 people. So when you think about a city going from 86,000 jobs with this dramatic loss down to 600, think about the repercussions for neighborhoods, for the city tax base, the repercussions for the spirit of the people. And Flint struggles. Flint has sought to take measures to address the question, and a number of them have been quite innovative. Flint has struck out fairly aggressively, looking to create a kind of urban homesteading approach where there's a government seizure of abandoned buildings and abandoned properties. And they've been extremely interested in trying to get families and households into them. So it's a city that is Flint, which is very dynamic and very much reflective of the broader reality of Rust Belt cities.
You know, I want to set forth early in our conversation that this is not going to be all doom and gloom. And Dan Seals, maybe you can talk about some of the progress that has been made in revitalizing some of these local economies that were so reliant on manufacturing. We were talking about Flint, but this is certainly a story that's played out in a lot of Illinois cities as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that point. I think the narrative has often been doom and gloom, but the facts actually don't support that, at least not with the economy we have today. I mean, let's take manufacturing as an example. You know, it is often thought of as being this dark, dirty, dangerous industry that, you know, no one would want their kid to go into when they grow up. The fact is, it's still a huge part of our economy, a growing part of our economy, and one that's providing good jobs. We have 560,000 people or more who are employed in manufacturing. It's almost 9% of the state's workforce, fourth highest in the U.S. in terms of the amount of GDP that comes out of it. The size of the manufacturing economy is the fourth largest in the U.S. So this is a great thing. What we're seeing is that the types of jobs in manufacturing are changing. They are becoming high tech. They are becoming high paid. And this is becoming an attractive pathway forward. And we're seeing a lot of local communities who are really driving the way forward, you know, in manufacturing and frankly in other industries. So, you know, today our economy is $1 trillion. We're number two for our infrastructure, number one for job creation in the Midwest. And that's a story that we need to do a better job of telling, because a lot of that story is being led by, you know, small and mid-sized communities who are, you know, being thoughtful about economic growth and partnering with the state and attracting new businesses and supporting the ones that they have. So I do think there's a lot of cause for optimism here. We are moving the right direction, and there's still more to do, but I like what I'm seeing.
Well, Chris, with moving Pillsbury forward, Chris Richmond, what we just heard Dan talking about there is, you know, communities that are bringing manufacturing jobs back. I don't think anyone expects Pillsbury Mills to reopen or anything like that. So what are you seeing? What do you envision for that site in 10 years, in 20 years? How do you see it fitting into the bigger economic picture of Springfield?
Right. I see the Pillsbury site. You know, we've got an 18-acre industrial site that's situated right next to an active rail yard. And we've had naturally had brownfield redevelopment specialists look at the site and tell us the highest and best use would be lighter medium manufacturing. So, you know, the vision 5-10 years out is to see the cleared site with a new 200,000 to 300,000 square foot facility that's highly efficient, perhaps run in part with solar power or renewable energies, and employing well over 100 people and utilizing that rail yard next door. So that's really the vision we have for the 18-acre site that is Pillsbury today.
David Wilson, how do you see cities generally try to revitalize their local economies in recent decades, right? We talk about economic development. What does that actually mean on the ground in places like Flint, Michigan, for example?
Yeah, my sense is that there are many cities in Illinois and in other states in the Rust Belt that are increasingly recognizing that the old traditional model of manufacturing is not going to be the wave of the future. So that the idea that you can have a mega corporation or industry that's going to employ thousands of people and tens of thousands of people using assembly line strategies and tactics, that's really something in the past. So I'm going to strike a note of optimism like my colleagues have done on the panel. I think that there's a recognition, for example, in the state of Illinois, that we do as a state, we have the opportunity to grow by recognizing high tech, recognizing robotics, recognizing that there's a future in certain kinds of industry. Not the old stuff, but the new emerging economies, the new emerging things that come out of a post-industrial economy.
All right, we need to take a break. When we return, more on the lasting effects of the decline of the old manufacturing companies in Illinois and across the Rust Belt, and what communities here are trying to do to revitalize their economies. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation on the lasting effects of the decline of the old manufacturing economy in Illinois and across the Rust Belt, and what communities are doing about it as they try to revitalize their economies in these old, hulking, rusting sites on the local landscape. Joining us for this conversation was Chris Richmond, president of the nonprofit Moving Pillsbury Forward, which is working to revitalize a long-closed Pillsbury factory in Springfield. Also with us was Dan Seals, CEO of Intersect Illinois, the state's public-private economic development partnership, and Dave Wilson, professor in the Department of Geography and Geographic Information Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Because our conversation is on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you think by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Chris, I want to talk more about this Pillsbury Mills site, because I'm imagining that turning it into this, you know, new futuristic manufacturing facility you envisioned, it's not quite as simple as, like, get a bulldozer in there and a dump truck and, you know, take it down, clear the rubble, build something new. What are some of the challenges in redeveloping that site?
Right. You know, the Pillsbury site, of course, you know, it's a challenge because it sat for so long. It was a manufacturing facility for, you know, 70 plus years. And there are huge structures on the site. So that's really our biggest challenge. And you know, our next biggest challenge, I'm sure, is the hazardous materials that have been on site, primarily asbestos. There's still a couple of $1 million worth of cleanup there with asbestos to be done. U.S. government back in 2017 did an emergency cleanup of $3 million on the site. So, you know, large numbers, we're talking in multi-millions. We've got about a $10 million project to get the site cleared. And what we've found is, you know, we've had to really work diligently with our community leaders all throughout, you know, Springfield and at the State House, as well as our congressional delegation, get everybody on board with the long-term plan and build our local capacity to deal with this particular property because it's so large. So yeah. That's what we've found, you know, on the ground doing a particular project is really gauging your community capacity to deal with brownfields and then, you know, meeting it wherever that capacity is. And in many cases, having to work to expand that capacity. And for instance, here in Springfield, we recognized early on that we didn't have an environmental engineer that was ready to tackle the project locally. So, you know, we looked all throughout Illinois and settled on one out of Rockford, Illinois, where they're based at. So we don't always have those capacities within our own community, and we have to look a little bit farther out.
Dan Seals, you know, as the economy evolves, this idea of the Rust Belt is still very alive. As you and others at Intersect Illinois, I'm sure, are talking with, you know, potential future manufacturers looking at sites like these, maybe they're a little put off by the specifics of individual brownfields and chemical cleanups and things that might have to happen. But there's also just the broader idea of that sort of Rust Belt reputation. What do you hear from people and businesses who've looked at setting up shop in Illinois? Is that perception an obstacle in your experience?
The idea of a Rust Belt does not come up as often as you might think. I think when folks come to Illinois, in fact, they tend to see an opportunity in some of the former facilities. And I'll give you an easy example. You know, some years ago, Mitsubishi was in, Bloomington Normal producing vehicles. They pulled out and left their facility there. Years later, an unknown company called Rivian came in, took that facility, retrofitted it, and now they employ something like 7,000 people. So still manufacturing, the site has been repurposed and reconfigured, and it's growing. So that's a huge opportunity, especially now, because nationally, it's very hard to find an existing site that has power, that has proper zoning, that has proper access to water and interstate or rail. And so when these sites are found, I mean, they're called unicorns in the industry, and so they're highly sought after. Chris is doing something much harder with his work with Pillsbury, but he's doing the right thing. There are other sites like that are effectively sitting outside of the economy right now and not helping the areas that they're in because of the remediation that has to be done. And so I think there's an argument here to have more support and more funds focused on getting those sites cleaned up so that they can get back to contributing to the economy as they were.
Professor Wilson, I want to come back to this idea, or I guess the prevailing ideas of economic development that you were talking about earlier, right? When those ideas are actually executed, who do they typically end up serving, right? The people of Flint have had a pretty rough go of it. Some of that had to do with incompetent city administration. I'm sure people remember the water crisis that happened there. But talk about economic development and who it serves, who it might leave behind.
Yeah, that's a great question. Economic development can be a very mixed bag in places like Flint. And there are programs that I do believe have the most benevolent of intentions. That is that they are very interested in serving the people on the ground. But the major dilemma is that very often the working class, and especially the poor and the racialized poor, don't benefit to the same degree as other workers in the city and other residents in the city. So these programs have to be very carefully structured with population subgroups in mind, who they want to benefit on the ground. And once that decision is made, what becomes very important is to execute a program which will truly benefit the most disadvantaged populations in cities like Flint. I do have to add very quickly that urban environments like Flint and Detroit and Cleveland and Chicago, to a substantial degree, they're wrestling with structural dilemmas. And it's very difficult for these programs and policies to address these structural dilemmas. One of them in particular is the new kinds of jobs that are coming into these cities. So yes, there are jobs that are require educationally intensive backgrounds, and they're well-paying, and we've made brief illustration to them before. We talked about them briefly. But a major growth area of jobs in these communities are low-wage dead-end jobs, jobs that don't have futures for people in terms of having decent health care and having decent qualities of life, quite frankly. And those kinds of jobs are proliferating. in places like Flint, and they're growing, and there's not a lot of decent jobs in between the extremes of low wage dead end jobs and educationally intensive high tech jobs. And that's one of the structural dilemmas that places like Flint find themselves in.
What do you mean by low wage dead end? Like, what's an example of that? I mean, I think people can imagine, you know, Rivian wants, you know, maybe to get that. I don't know for sure, but you know, if you want to work in an EV manufacturing plant as opposed to the, you know, the plants that my great grandfather worked in off the boat from Lithuania, where he had no formal education and didn't need that to get a factory job. Factories are looking for more education now. But when you're saying the low wage dead end jobs, are we talking about, you know, working in the restaurants that serve these manufacturing facilities, or what are you referring to?
Oh, absolutely. The fast food economy is a component part of that, is a big part of that. Jobs in Walmart, jobs in the box providers in our urban environments. Manufacturing jobs that pay decent wages, there still exist. I believe the evidence suggests they're shrinking, but that there's jobs in industries that pay extremely well. But that's not applicable to a lot of people that are living in our cities today, in our Rust Belt cities.
Dan Seals, how do you make sure that economic development in Illinois really helps everybody, not just the businesses, not just people at the higher end of the education spectrum, but everyone, even in the communities those businesses serve?
That's an important point. I appreciate David's comments there. What we're seeing happen fairly effectively in Illinois is community colleges are filling the gap. Community colleges are becoming expert at aligning with local employers to understand what job skills are needed to fill those jobs, and then working with the population on the other side of workers to get those skills trained on and certified so that folks can work. So for example, Heartland Community College has an electric vehicle training program that they're doing that's feeding workers into places like Rivian. Places you're seeing classes held by the community college right off the factory floor. Because there are opportunities, you know, for jobs there. So I think those community colleges are playing a key role in taking folks who may not have the skill set currently to take advantage of the job opportunities and getting them there in a reasonable amount of time so that they can take those jobs. It still requires work and studying and effort and coordination on everyone's part. But we're seeing that work, and I think that's one of the keys to doing it right.
Chris, we're coming to the end of our time together. What are the next big steps in the Moving Pillsbury Forward project? What do you need? What's it going to take to make this happen?
Right. Our next big steps, you know, this last year, again, I mentioned we have a $10 million project to get the site fully cleared. We have $6 million in commitments at this point, and we've identified that final $4 million that we're going after. And we're working with our community partners, our stakeholders, and local and state government. So this year, you'll see us continuing to fundraise and get those commitments to get this project seen to completion. And we'll start large-scale abatement and demolition activities by mid-year 2024.
Well, that is all the time we have for our conversation today. I want to thank Chris Richmond, president of Moving Pillsbury Forward, which is a group working to rehabilitate the old abandoned Pillsbury Mills site in Springfield. Dan Seals is the CEO of Intersect Illinois, the state's public-private economic development partnership. And David Wilson, professor in the Department of Geography and Geographic Information Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, who actually joined us today from Germany. He's been in Europe on speaking engagements. David, Dan, and Chris, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you. Pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
That's all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow on the 21st show, reparations remain a contentious political issue, but in Evanston, in the Chicago suburbs, they've had a reparations program in place for a few years now. We'll hear what people there think of it, hear about other cities seeking to learn from Evanston's example, and talk about what keeps reparations from gaining greater traction nationwide. Before we go, I do want to urge you to join our texting group. You really do put the public in public radio. We love hearing your questions for our guests and your comments and sharing them on air. You can join by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, the word is TALK. The number is 217-803-0730. You can find that number and every other way to get in touch with us at our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got our past shows there and links to our podcast, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can always let us know what you thought about today's program and suggest anything you see in your area that the media is not focusing enough on. We'd love to hear about it. Email us. Talk at 21stshow.org is the address. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.